Now more of The Bernie Show.
And welcome back. Good to be with you. We have Derek Gould coming up in a little while. One story, and probably don't have time to get into it because, again, Derek Gould is we've got to keep the phones open. Maybe even say the microphone's open for Derek Gould coming up. But things heating up down at the SEC spring meetings or whatever they call them. You know, that's when they parade the commissioner out, then all the coaches out. Not all at the same time. You know, they have – it runs over 3 days, and there's three or four coaches will talk one day, and then next day, same thing. So Eli Drinkwitz was one of the coaches today. But – you know, the SEC's debating whether to alter the schedule and keep it at 8 conference game, which has been for a long time, or move it up to 9. And it looked like it was going to – it was leaning heavily to 9, which is what I support. But there's been some gentle pushback or at least an attempt to say, well, we got to slow down and think about this some more, that kind of thing. Not a hard no to it. But according to The Athletic, and Seth Emerson's really good, and The Athletic covers that conference extremely well, you know, what appeared to be not 9 will be the choice. It will be the voted choice. There's some doubt now about that. And I think that is, you know, you read between the leaves, and I think the commissioner is Greg Sankey, of course, probably a little perturbed because he won't come out and say it. But Greg Sankey, like all highly skilled communicators, they can make their point about what they think should be done without saying, look, we got to go to 9. Now, they're not going to just come right out. A guy like Sankey is going to respect the people that are on the fence, and he doesn't want to bully anyone. But he gave an interview to a pretty small group of reporters last night, and, you know, they all came away thinking, oh, my gosh, it's obvious that he wants to go to 9. But there is some resistance. Like Georgia was thought to be good on the idea with 9, and now there's some hesitation because their school president, you know, is running his yap on this. I'm not sure it'll get completed. There's just a lot of dynamics and everything else. But he was pressed. His name is Moorhead, the president of Georgia. Mm-hmm. He was pressed on that, and he made it clear what the real motive is. Has nothing to do. Well, we can't put these student athletes through this. We can't do this to our fans, you know. And our university needs that money with playing these blood donor games, and that's what they're talking about.
Right.
But Moorhead laid it all on the table. He said, "I may be saying more than Commissioner Sankey would want me to, but obviously, if you go to a 9-game schedule, you have to be compensated for going to a 9-game schedule." There's still some dynamics that have to play out with our media partners. In other words, ESPN, yo, pay up. We want more money.
Of course.
So I always love it when these guys try to argue or debate on matters of principle. It always comes down to, whoa, how much ESPN going to step up? They're getting us cheap if we go to 9 games. We're gonna have to adjust this payment program. That's what this is all about. It sounds to me that even though there's some waffling here, I'll say this unequivocally. Greg Sankey's the best commissioner in college sports, and he's outstanding at what he does, and he's always been able to get the money in a way that makes everybody in that conference happy. If he wants to go to 9 teams, you go to 9 teams. I'm not saying he's the czar. I'm not saying everything he says is right, but everybody in that conference has profited in an abundant way, and the money keeps flowing in. And even the ne'er-do-well programs that are sort of along for the ride, they clean up. They pull in the cash. It's nirvana for them. Even if they don't spend money at all, hardly, on their baseball program, Mizzou, even if the football program is like in this perpetual state of being stalled, Mizzou. I'm not naming any names, of course, but Mizzou. Mizzou, by the way, is in favor of going to 9. And some of the other so-called lesser lights are maybe in favor of being 8. And a lot of it has to do with they got to get them 6 wins so they can play in a bowl game no one's ever heard of or will watch, you know?
Oh, yeah. I know
so
exactly.
So if you're Mississippi State, you're South Carolina, although they're getting better and better and better. but some of the lesser teams, their whole thing is like, well, we got to get them six wins, so we better get St. Agnes of Mercy in here. We'll give them a nice payday. St. Agnes of Mercy University. Where's that at? I don't know. I think it's somewhere down south. I don't know where they are, to be honest. We'll get them up here. We'll play a little football with them. We'll give them a payday, and we'll get our six win. You know. When in doubt, listen to Greg Sankey.
Yep. He will tell you, and he will direct where they need to go. That's the bottom line.
Where has he ever been wrong on the big stuff?
I'm right there with you. Yeah, 100%.
Can you imagine the arrogance of some university president claiming that he knows more than about the right thing to do than Greg Sankey?
Right.
You know, exactly. So,
all good stuff.
Anyway, but keep an eye on that. That's been a hot topic in the SEC meetings down in Destin. Let's bring in Derek Gould, and we're always appreciative of having him on once a week with us here on the Birdie Show. Derek Gould, the outstanding beat writer for the Post-Dispatch STL Today, one of the best baseball writers in America. And once again, want to thank him and praise him for the very eloquent, very, very beautiful story that he wrote about the passing of the great Rick Hummel, the commish. Derek, down at the ballpark, Cardinals play tonight, and then they're off for 2 days, and then it's on to Pittsburgh. That should be an interesting series. Derek, how you doing?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, good point about interesting series in Pittsburgh, because the Cardinals get their choice of who to throw. They won't get to throw, I guess, you know, they could even throw Michaelis there toward the back end of it. But, you know, I think that's a really fascinating series, because they need to chew up some ground in the division. They need to go for those, what in hockey they call those 4-point games. There are fewer of them this season, Bernie, and they got to chew them up. So, thank you too for the kind words there. But you caught my ear with saying the interesting series at PNC Park. Totally agree. Probably a little bit under the radar interesting series.
The other thing I would say that I know you agree with, because you're one of the preachers on this. I prefer that the Pirates be good. I love it as a sports town. They've been put through a lot, their fans. I prefer that they be a good team. But no matter if they're good, bad, or otherwise, that's a ballpark you have to have on your list to go watch some games. It doesn't matter. Absolutely. The state of the Pirates doesn't matter. I love that place. I miss being able to go there.
Yeah, it's a jewel. It's one of the it's in the running for the best view from any seat in the ballpark. Just one of the more picturesque ballparks. There's, you know, and that's true walking around it, walking in it, sitting in it, watching a game from it. It is just, it's one of the crown jewel ballparks there. And, you know, at some point in time, they'll have a team that earns the ballpark that it has. And I hope that happens. I hope that happens for the city. But most of all, I hope it happens for that ballpark, because it's just, I do hope that it becomes a timeless ballpark, you know, and that they do what it takes to maintain it so that it becomes kind of the Dodger Stadium of its era, one that, you know, evolves and grows but maintains the treasure that it has because of that view.
Derek Gould with us. Derek, I got a question that I think it's on a lot of minds, which is the Cardinals are, you know, they will officially depart or leave or exit their 19 games in 19-day stretch. Two days off, and then they kind of reset going to Pittsburgh. And I know Ali Marmol told you guys, well, I should say you men and women today, that they're going to reset in terms of the rotation and go back to a five-man rotation. And I assume that's going to be Libertor or Mats, but educate me if I'm wrong. But what do you think that decision is going to come down to? Do you have a feeling on that?
I think it's Libertor. And I think it's the order that is being discussed, and when Wainwright fits into it, and how to separate the lefties. But I think it's Libertor. You know, what they saw from Matt yesterday, that 96, what they see from him in sustaining kind of the strength and velocity, I think they are eager to watch and try to learn if that happens in shorter stints, and if he's been trying to kind of you know, ration out his velocity a little bit because of how he feels strength-wise, or how he feels that knee is, or how he feels coming back from it. Marmol today described to the writers about how that rehab process for him meant this past winter was about strengthening the knee, not strengthening the body. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense, right? He's coming back from a knee injury that did not require surgery, but could have. And he was able to build up, and heal and not have the surgery done. But that did take a lot of effort on his part to maintain the strength and dexterity and agility on everything so that the knee wasn't taking a beating. At the same time, then maybe that changes how he can sustain his strength through starts, how he can sustain that velocity. And, you know, 96 off his fingers yesterday, way different look for him as a pitcher if he's operating at a higher velocity with that sinker and not just to, you know, lefties, which is what his role would be out of the bullpen, but to righties too. So if he gets in a jam or that three batter minimum and he's got to face a righty, he's not going to be vulnerable to it if he's got that velocity because of what he's able to do. You know, he pitched inside yesterday, which he hadn't been doing as a starter. Velocity allows him to do that to the right-handed side of the plate too. So I think, you know, you see in his use yesterday and the results something that flickers through the Cardinals' kind of imagination as to, okay, all right, is maybe this the best place for him?
It's really interesting just to see how this will all shake out. You know, who knows? There could be another scramble with the rotation coming up. It's just as far as
there will
whether,
be.
Yeah, whether they make a trade, yeah. I don't know.
They have but to. If they don't, they're not contending.
I think that's absolutely true, you know.
I don't know how to be more blunt, but yeah, they need some pitching. They might even need another six-man turn of the rotation coming up because, you know what, coming back from London is not going to be easy. It's not 19 in a row, but it is two there, jet lag, then Astros, Yankees. You want to know where a season, where a team turns from a buyer to a seller? It's that week.
You laid that out very well. The suspense will be building. To your point on Mats, he looked good in relief last season when he came back and pitched, with a knee that wasn't maybe fully set. He looked good, and his stuff, as you point out, plays well in a relief role. And the one question I have about him though is how much of this has been like a lack or a shortage of confidence, or just confidence that he needs to maybe restore. And do you think the bullpen would be a good place for that to happen? Because, again, his stuff plays as a reliever, and they need a lefty reliever. So it's not like they're dumping him into some meaningless role. You pointed that out. But what could that do for his confidence, and do you think the confidence is an issue?
It's a great question, Bernie, and it is. Just in talking with him, you know, he wants results, and they haven't been there, and you know, his usual route to getting them, he hasn't found it. He hasn't operated with the same confidence or conviction is sometimes the word that they use, which is a stand-in for confidence. The pitches, they're not behaving the way he wants. You know, he doesn't have the slider. The cutter isn't as crisp as he needs it to be as it was when he had the good run with Toronto that got him the contract with the Cardinals. You're right. I mean, I think in, you know, the way he talks about him, the way he kind of has been searching for it. It does relate to that. And I don't know if it's a given that if he goes out to the bullpen, he finds it. Because one thing about the bullpen is you have to ignore the results that can erupt in one single inning, right? You can have four really good outings, and then the next one that goes south can be a loss, a blown save, an ERA buster. And it doesn't do any good to say, well, look at the previous three, because the welt on your ERA or the welt on the standings is so big that it dwarfs any success of the previous ones. And that's not the nature of how a guy pitches. That's just the nature of operating in small sample sizes. So there's not the chance to kind of broaden out the number of innings and build confidence from, you know, like a campfire. It's more like, all right, I got a spark here. Can I light my confidence with that? And it doesn't always really work that way. So he'll have to adjust. You know, if this is something that they're going to commit to for a while, he'll have to adjust to finding that confidence in a different way than he has. And I think that's a fair question for him. And, you know, and I think it's a fair question for him to ask. And I talked to him the other day in Cleveland, and he's telling us about how he thinks of himself as a starter, and he came here to start, and his contract is one of a starter, and that means something to him. If that means something to him, the way, like, catching means something to Wilson Contreras, then it's fair to wonder, like, can he draw confidence from something else? Because clearly Wilson Contreras wasn't going to draw confidence for his catching ability from being a DH. So is that any different for Steven Matz? And if you only give him limited time to find that, does it only take one then for all of a sudden that spark of confidence to go out?
Derek Gould with us, STLtoday.com. Of course, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Follow him on Twitter at DGould. All right, I have to ask you this.
Sure.
The Jordan Walker comments, I don't know that it qualifies as a controversy, even though, of course, Twitter exists for people to fan flames of controversy.
Yeah,
I've already learned on Twitter today that, oh, well, that's it. He wants out of here, you know. Oh, okay. Yeah, is that right? Anyway, but what do you make? I was a little surprised by his message, and it's like, no, I'm going to go back the way, you know, I hit. The other, in effect, saying this stuff wasn't really working, so I'm just going to go back to. What do you make of that? I was just a little surprised by it. I just assumed that, you know, he was going to sort of follow the recommendations, you know, see some progress, and everyone lives happily ever after. Now, he was making progress. Last 13 games, really good, but he had discarded what they've been asking him to do. So you're a level-headed guy, unlike me. What's your assessment of this?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's, the timing of it is interesting. And I'll point to the work of my colleague, Daniel Guerrero, who covers the minors and actually was present at that press conference that is circulating, the video that's circulating. And the story, and this is where the timing is good, the story that he wrote from that press conference and from additional reporting down there in Memphis ran in today's paper. And it offers context for those comments. And not only that, but offers what he said, what Walker said next. And some of the questions that asked him to explore or explain what he meant. And, you know, like, he gave great details. And, you know, I'll pull them directly from Daniel's story, where he talked about how, you know, he had to change his mechanics in a way to greet the ball up front. One of the reasons to do that is to get the ball in the air. That's a change that he made, that he's like, okay, I know how to, that's something I have to do. I have to greet the ball further out front. And it's something that, you know, I know, I've talked to him, and I've seen him work on this in batting practice, which is really fascinating. But so there was a change. There was some other stuff that he was doing, some rotational stuff that he said was closing off his view of the pitch. And Daniel, you know, I won't be able to capture it all. Daniel did a really great job of, like, explaining each of those things, all within, like, one paragraph of his story, where he details, like, these are the changes that he made. And then the clip really kind of fixates on the one thing that he was saying about ground balls and flyouts, right? Like, that he was trying to hit the ball in the air. Well, it sounded like a hitter who was chasing results, and that's not what they wanted him to do. And he talked about how he had to change his mindset to kind of get back to the process of what he was trying to do, which is still hitting the ball hard. And yeah, that's still going to be hitting the ball on the ground sometimes. But, you know, it is exactly like he described later, hit the ball out in front of the plate, learn to lay off the pitches that you can't drive in the air, you know, especially early in the counts or when you're ahead in the count. Those kind of things are approach-oriented. And, you know, it did seem like he was chasing this notion that I got to hit everything in the air, and that's never been the message. And if you give Daniel's story a read, it goes into greater detail, and you start to see that, like, that one clip was about mentality and about finding success. And then he went on to say, like, here are all the things that they had me work on that I'm buying into that now I have the confidence to pursue.
Yeah, and I read Daniel's piece today and liked it because it did have some good, really good information in there. So I think context is important. You know, context is absolutely important. So with the Cardinals, I'm asking you to speculate, which is not fair, but do you think the Cardinals in any way were taken aback by this? Even though, again, the full context, it's just not that big of a deal. But what would you think their feelings might be? Are they cool with it? Are they okay
with his comments?
No, with just the the progress he's making relative to, in effect, what they suggested he needed to do?
They are more encouraged over the last two and a half weeks than they were in the previous stretch. It is important to note that he had a work day. You remember when he was with the major league team, like he had that work day. I think it was in San Francisco, right? And they're like, hey, look, we're just going to get you with the coaches. You're just gonna, this is what we want to see. And then he was going to play the next day. He didn't play the next day. He went through the same thing. And it was like, all right, you know, like one of the things that they were telling me is that he'd really never done some of the work off a curveball machine that they were trying to get him to do. You know, and that that took practice and that took repetition. And, you know, it's for him to kind of gear his swing the way he'd always had success was fine, but it wasn't going to translate to success in the majors when he was seeing the same kind of pitches, being attacked the same kind of way. He wasn't going to hit his way out of that, and they needed him to – I'm trying to think of how to best describe this. They needed, like, some feel for the drills, too, that would help with that. And so he got that second work day, and then within 24 hours later, you know, he was off to Memphis. In part because it was like this is a longer thing, you know, that they wanted him to work on. They also, and this feeds right into like the comment that he made, they also wanted him to have some confidence, which you've asked about with Matt and we saw with Contreras.
Right.
It's okay, they thought, and we can debate this, certainly. I'm offering their opinion, not mine. I want to make that very clear.
Of course.
But they thought it would be okay if the guy went down there and just crushed and, you know, worked on his swing, got away from the constant, like, approach that he was seeing, low, lower, lowest, and started dealing with pitchers that he – that are game pitchers, that are wily pitchers, that have major league experience pitchers, but that he is superior than. And have that be – have him arrive in the majors with a gust of AAA success, not no AAA experience. Again, we can debate that and everything, but that's how it let out. And so – to your question, I think that was something that they were like, we're not seeing the progress when he's in the majors. We're not seeing that progress with our coaches. We're not seeing that progress over a stretch of days. This is going to be a longer term thing than he or they wanted. But they are seeing it now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I don't know what, like, I don't know if they actually have a timetable, and if they do, they're not going to share it, which I understand, but I would imagine
I don't think they did,
but I would imagine
if he wasn't performing,
and he's on a pretty good 2-week run or thereabouts, and
right,
I would think that if he can continue that, then we'll probably see him fairly soon. But again, I'm
flat day, sure.
Yeah, you know, it's because their outfield's like Ben Fred wrote a really good column about this today in the Post-Dispatch STL today. You can go read it. You know, it's not like they have an outfield right now that's tearing it up. I mean, it's quite a big mess, actually. And even though there's some encouraging signs, like Knute Barr went healthy, he's a really good player. We know that. I think Alec Burleson's making progress. I mean, he's going to be a good major league hitter. But it's kind of messy with the injuries and just trying to have a vision of what this outfield will be or could be soon. It's, let's say the vision is very murky, you know, and it's kind of been that way for a while. But that only invites more wondering about, okay, is Walker ready or will he soon be ready? And I understand that because I don't push back on that at all. It's natural, as Ben Fred pointed out, it's natural that you have to give that serious thought. If not now, soon, you know?
Absolutely. I think so. I think the timing is going to be right. I'm not sure when. I mean, you know, Nootbaar's injury plays into this a little bit. Tyler O'Neill's timetable is, you know, to borrow your word, murky and discouraging at this point. You know, Dylan Carlson was sprinting today and will be off on a rehab assignment soon. You know, an outfield, I mean, you could really make the case that the best outfield that the Cardinals could put out there in the major leagues right now, or in a week, let's say, if Newpark comes back and if Dylan is ready, that it's, you know, Jordan in left, Dylan in center, and Newpark in right. And they should try to see what they could get from that group, because the upside is there. if the health is there, and what else, whatever else they've been going with hasn't worked. You know, Donovan being in the outfield isn't, you know, it works and he plays well. He's done some good things, and, you know, keeping his bat in the lineup certainly has an appeal. But, you know, is there another way to do that and still get more production from the outfield? I think they have to explore that here in the coming future for sure.
Derek Gould, my friend, thank you very, very much. And we look forward to reading, well, whatever you write. And interesting time to be a Cardinals fan. Maybe more interesting. Certainly a lot more work being a Cardinals beat writer.
Always.
Take care, my friend.
How'd the event go Thursday night, Derek?
Oh, that's right. Thanks for asking. You know, we put it online. Little plug here, KFNS.com or 590thefan.com or the 590 The Fan app. Will actually put it, sent a file to Jim Huer. He's saying, hey, I recorded this this whole thing we did Thursday, so if you want to use it, that'd be great. And I'm sure it's also available, you know, under the Seeing Red for people who have a subscription to it on Apple or whatever. So you can hear it. We had a ball. We just had an absolute ball. It was great to be with Will. Laugh with Will, tell some stories with Will. And it's funny because he, no surprise to Derek Gould here or anyone else. I mean, yes, we talked about the book, and I was trying to get deep inside his thinking on certain things. And it was just he did so, but it's like I knew he was itching to talk about the Cardinals. So,
yeah.
You know, it was typical Will, and I mean that in the best possible sense. He's so funny. In those settings, he's so damn funny. Spontaneous wit. I mean, really, really good. So we had a good time. Thanks for asking. The book is phenomenal. The book is phenomenal.
He left me a book there, so I'm going to go try to pick it up.
Oh, good, good. Well, if he promised, it'll be there. I got to run, my friend. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye.
That's our friend Derek Gould. Yeah, he. We had a good time. As I mentioned, we had a really good time. Thursday night at Left Bank Books. What a great classic bookstore in St. Louis. They have such a wide range of authors that come in to speak and do book signings. It doesn't matter what you're interested in. It's going to be something for everyone. Before we take a break, I want to once again sing the praises of a place that I visited the first time and thought is like, this is absolutely gorgeous. I was in awe. And I'm talking about Pisiglia Landscape Nursery Garden Center, which is in Wildwood. In fact, 1855 Highway 109 in Wildwood, or certainly visit them online at pisiglia.com. But it's a 10-acre business, and every step you take and turn your head, there's something more beautiful than the rest. Or something more beautiful than what you just saw. And it's all beautiful. It's just degrees of beauty. And Ms. Bernie does a lot of gardening, and she's kind of perfectionist. She's very passionate about it, and it shows because her garden that I get to look at and enjoy just looks great. So I kind of know from living with a really serious gardener what this means to have a place where you can go find anything you want. I'm talking about Pisiglia. Find anything you want. Get all the advice that you want, all the accessories that you need, and just the ability to maybe take your gardening to the next level with the help of Pisiglia, because they can do that. And if you are thinking about a landscaping project, because again, they have everything else, but I don't want you to forget about the landscape. I mean, they have the beautiful flowers, the perennials, the trees, the shrubs. 30 years ago, they also added to this business, the Pisiglia family, a landscaping service. And rather than me describe just what a lovely, lovely job they do, go to pisiglia.com because you can see examples of their landscape work. Just tremendous, just tremendous. And they have everything you need to create the perfect outdoor space of your dreams. So you need to go by and see them, and do not hesitate to ask for advice if you're having a problem keeping something you planted healthy, you know, flourishing, all those good words, because sometimes it's tricky. They have the answers. They're so good at that, and they love to do it for you if you want to ask them some advice. Stop by and meet the experts. And again, Find them at 1855 Highway 109 in Wildwood or at pasiglia.com. We'll be right back after this on The Bernie Show.